Every entrepreneur has been there. Growing pains
obstacles make you
growth gains.
It's the challenges that cause us to level up.
I'm your host, Alicia Dominico.
I saw something recently where the actual marketing message said, "You are not a number to us, but here is your new customer number." And I thought to myself, there's a gigantic mental disconnect in that single sentence. My name is Joey Coleman. I'm the chief experience composer, which means I help to get all the pieces of your business on the same sheet of music, playing in harmony. And for the last 20 years, I have taught organizations around the world how to keep their customers, how to create the kinds of remarkable interactions that will keep the customers that you've worked so hard to acquire coming back for more.
Joey wrote a book called How to Never Lose a Customer that I devoured. It was full of insights that I wanted to apply immediately here at Tangible Words, and I think anyone listening to this podcast will feel the same if you're in a leadership position at a company. How do you stop client turnover? How do you make sure that you hire clients that are going to be a good fit for everyone on your team to work with and for you to collaborate with long term? These are concepts that Joey gives you a process for in his book. His book teaches companies how to keep their customers, focusing on the tumultuous first 100 days when there's a 50-50 chance of keeping or losing them. He believes the customer journey has 8 phases.
They all start with the letter A, and the idea behind that is if you get all of these right, it's like getting straight A's on your report card in school. Everybody's happy with the experience. Everybody's getting the value they hope for. Phase one is the assess phase. This is when a prospect is considering whether or not they want to do business with you. In common parlance, we refer to this as marketing and sales. In most businesses, this is the entire journey. Once they're done and they sell you, they're like, woohoo, we're good, we're set. In Joey's version of the customer journey, this is but one step in an 8-step process. We then go to phase two, the admit phase. This is when a prospect acknowledges that they have a problem or a need that they believe you can help them with. They sign on the dotted line, they hand over their hard-earned cash, they transition from being a prospect to being an actual customer. Immediately after that action is taken, they go to phase three, the affirm phase. Now, in common parlance, we refer to this as buyer's remorse. This is when the brand new customer begins to doubt the decision that they just made to do business with you, to hire you, to buy your product, to sign up for your service. In the affirm stage, we need to be going above and beyond to reaffirm the logic and the choice that the customer implemented when they made the decision to sign on the dotted line and become a customer. We then come to phase four, the activate stage. This is the first real moment of truth. In an agency setting, it might be the kickoff meeting. In a product environment, it might be when the product arrives in your customer's hands and they open the box and they start to use it for the first time. Now, the good news is most businesses are actually pretty good at the activate stage. Everybody's excited. Everybody's feeling good. It's usually a good launch. But then we go into phase five. And I will tell you, Alicia, this is where most businesses start to fall off the rails. Phase five is the acclimate phase. This is when the customer becomes familiar with your way of doing business. See, you've delivered your product or your service hundreds of times, thousands of times, maybe tens of thousands of times. But to a brand new customer, they have no idea what's coming next. In the acclimate phase, you have to hold their hand, get them used to your cadence of business, your way of approaching the world. Now, some people listening may be saying, but Joey, you don't understand. I gave them a contract. I gave them a proposal that outlined all the steps of the process. Friends, your customers are just like you. They sign things that they don't read all the time. Now, some of you are saying, but Joey, that's not true. I read all of them. And I would encourage you to think about the last time you rented a car and you're standing at the counter and they've got that little box there and they're saying, just click this, just click this. And you're clicking the button like a gerbil would click on the thing to get a food pellet because you just want the keys to the car and you want to be able to go on your way. Your customers are the same way. So what can you do in the acclimate phase to hold their hand and teach them your way of doing business? We then come to phase six, the accomplish phase. This is when the customer achieves achieves the goal that they had when they originally decided to do business with you. Now, not every business reaches the accomplish phase, and not every customer reaches the accomplish phase, but we got to track that and celebrate it so that ideally we can take them to phase 7, the adopt phase, when the customer becomes loyal to you and only you. They're not going to go look at the competition. They are committed to your way of doing business. And if, and only if, we've navigated them through all of these previous 7 phases, do we reach phase 8, the advocate phase, the holy grail, nirvana, everything that most businesses want, when the customer becomes a raving fan, referring their friends and colleagues to you. In most businesses, we try to jump from the sale to asking for the referral or asking from the for the testimonial. I'm not opposed to this. And in fact, most businesses never properly ask for the referral or the testimonial. But the ones that do have a tendency to do it way too early in the cycle.
I'm so glad you did the summary of that, because the book really is a bit of a textbook to go through every stage of how you treat the customer. There were so many aha moments for me that I shared and we talked about in that amazing book club group that, you know, step number 3, people get squirrely. That whole buyer's remorse element can happen within a week. It can happen over a weekend. We really changed our processes once we realized that people were getting squirrely even within a week. And so we switched to weekly meetings and having this accountability chart of all the decisions that were made where they could always see it. And step 5 also had some really big aha moments for us too, that before we could celebrate more, the adoption of how they were going to work with us was going to be key. Like, we use Asana to track all of the work that we do. And our effort is to be transparent, but it actually makes a lot of customers feel fear to be having to work in yet a new platform and to understand how it operates. So we've actually made that part of our ideal customer profile now, that someone who would appreciate that level of organization, because they don't have it right now, but we bring that as additional value to the table. And so they acclimatize to our way of doing it, but we can also celebrate how they've adopted our way of doing things too, to keep them more organized. And our best clients really do develop those habits like we've developed.
Alicia, I love that example because it's something that happens with so many organizations, whether they're in the agency space or any other space. You start working with a new provider, whether that's a vendor, whether that's a customer, it doesn't matter. And invariably, they have their way of doing business. They have their preferred software. They have their preferred project management style. And it's almost as if we automatically expect that everyone's going to understand and adopt our approach. I think if we just slightly step back from our processes and procedures and say, what would it be like to be a brand new customer coming in cold here? Where would they be feeling anxious? And then just address the elephant in the room. Say, look, I understand that you hired us to help with HubSpot. Before we can get to that, we've got to help you with XYZ. We're going to have to learn this, but rest assured we're here. We're holding your hand. You don't need to become an Asana pro. You can be an Asana basic user. We're really just giving you insight into what we're doing, but here are the things you need to do. We're going to dial you up on how to use this project management software that's going to be the basis for our entire conversation. You only need to really know 2 things about this software: how to view where we are in the process and how to respond and who to respond to if you see something that you don't like or gives you pause or you're unsure about. Other than that, you don't have to do anything. The relief that will give a customer to then say, oh, so this is really just added value? This is just additional perspective and insight? Oh, I didn't even know I was paying for this. And suddenly your retainer, your fee that you're charging them, becomes even more valuable because they recognize the transparency, the insight, the perspective that you're giving them is a bonus, not a requirement for the success of their project.
Yeah, I love that. It's the preview of the experience they're going to have. It's the trailer for what's to come. And overcoming the objections at the same time is just another great idea that we've always talked about in sales and marketing, is that you should overcome the objections before your customer has them to allay any fears that are arising without you realizing. But having it so early in the process, I think, is before a lot of people think to do it right now. And that's why I think your book is so important. You mentioned some studies in some of your work that say that 80% of organizations think they provide a great customer experience, but only that's in comparison to 8% of customers who think that they provide a great experience. And I think that's worth diving into a little bit about. What is this gap? Where does it come from?
So it's some fantastic research. They basically went and asked CEOs, do you provide a great customer experience? And 80% of those surveyed said, yes, yes, we absolutely do. Great, outstanding experience. They then went to the customers of those organizations, not just random customers, the specific customers. And they said, what do you think? Is it a great, outstanding experience? And only 8% said yes. Why is there a big gap? Well, I think there's a gap based on two key factors. Number one, intention versus outcome. There's a lot of organizations that use beautiful buzzwords and beautiful marketing speak internally. We care about the customer. You're not a number to us. I saw something recently where the actual marketing message said, you are not a number to us, but here is your new customer number. And I thought to myself, there's a gigantic mental disconnect in that single sentence. The sentence starts out one way and I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And then I get to the end of the sentence and I feel like I've been punched in the face. This is how most organizations behave. So our intentions don't often match our behaviors or our outcomes, especially when it comes about talking about the experiences we're going to create. Additionally, I think when they were asking the CEOs, do you have a great customer experience? I think most CEOs, most leaders are still trapped in this space where they believe that the competition is the other people in their industry. Because they know their industry very well. They know what their competitors offer. They feel really good about their offerings by comparison. And so they say, yeah, we are the best tax accountants in the place. We are the best lawn mowing company in the place. We are the best chiropractor in our community, whatever it may be. What they fail to recognize is that your customers aren't comparing you to your industry competition. They are comparing you to every customer experience they've had. They're comparing you to Netflix, to Amazon, to Disney. They're comparing you to these things that are very seamless, that are very customer experience focused, that are very user experience focused. So while you're thinking, we're doing great for our industry, they're comparing you to these other interactions they have as consumers and customers going, yeah, but you're not. And that, I think, is a fundamental problem in most organizations today. We need to benchmark against all great experiences, not just our industry experiences.
This feels like a really good time to segue into the book that I know that you will be working on and releasing, because I think this happens all the time. You get a job offer, you start a new company, everybody's all excited, they're excited to have you, you're excited to be there, and then, I don't know, 6 weeks in, you probably know better than me, there's this letdown experience of how you hoped the job was going to be and how it ended up being, whether that's, again, an intention or experience. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So my first book was called Never Lose a Customer Again. And it's all about those eight phases of the customer journey and how we can make them better, particularly in the first 100 days. My next book, which I'm writing right now, comes out in 2023, is going to be called Never Lose an Employee Again. It's the same eight phases of the journey, but applied internally to the employee experience as opposed to externally to the customer experience. Now, what I think is interesting about this is twofold. Number one, most employee experiences are just as fraught with pitfalls and bad interactions and missed opportunities as customer experiences. But additionally, the customer experience and the employee experience are two sides of the same coin. If you want to have a remarkable customer experience, you've got to have employees that feel that their employee experience is remarkable. We've all had the experience of walking into the shop where the employee hates their job. And guess what? Our experience just became their experience. They hate their job. We're going to hate being a customer. Conversely, we've all had the experience where we walk in and we interact with somebody who's a delight. They're excited. They're thrilled. They're helpful. They're positive. I don't know about you, Alicia. I end up spending more money at those businesses. I spend more time looking at their products and their offerings. This stuff is contagious. So I think at the end of the day, we miss the opportunity to create remarkable employee experiences that will not only increase our employee morale, our employee retention, our employee productivity, but will also increase our customer experience, our customer retention, our customer profitability. These two things work in concert with each other.
I love that. I think that's so important. And I love to hear how it contributes not only to employee retention, which is something that every business is facing as they stare down the great resignation era, and so super relevant. I'm sad I have to wait until 2023 to read this. So if you need a beta reader, I'm your girl.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And I will say, just as a preview, something that I'm excited to do with this book, I'm going to be sharing case studies from the book and the research while I'm writing it on, you know, in newsletters and on my LinkedIn profile and places like that. So if folks want to get more of this, just feel free to reach out and connect. We'll be talking about it more on my podcast that I have called Experience This, which is all about customer and employee experiences. So if you're intrigued by this employee thing, and like me, you don't want to wait until next year when we finally get the book out and published, you can get some teasers and previews of the key takeaways in the research over the course of the next year.
As I say, it's super, super relevant right now. I think we've talked a little bit about the building blocks of a great customer experience strategy, and those being the 8 steps that you've already covered. Is there anything you wanted to add into that that we might have missed?
Well, I would just say this, and you kind of alluded to it in your comments, Alicia. You know, when I wrote Never Lose a Customer Again, one of the challenges I had is that I wanted to write something where the book could be a standalone solution. Lots of times you read a business book and you get to the end and you're like, oh, great. So what you've proven to me is I can go hire you to figure out how to do this, but I can't really use the book to figure it out myself. I tried to write the book as much of a blueprint and a framework to indicate what the process is. But as a result, when somebody picks up the book, it can feel a little overwhelming. It can feel a little daunting. So what I would encourage people to do is I listed through those 8 phases, those 8 A's. I guarantee that one or two stood out to you. As you were listening, you were like, oh, yeah, that's something we don't really think, or gosh, I've never thought about that, or oh, yeah, that's a spot where I know we have some challenges. Whatever one resonated with you, focus on that one first. You don't have to build the entire ship before you start sailing it. You can come in and do targeted mini fixes that will have huge impact on your overall experience and, frankly, your bottom line. And my theory is if we can start to improve the bottom line, now ideally I've justified you spending some more time, effort, and money on making a broader strategic approach to improve every aspect of the customer experience. But it is possible to start small.
I think that's so important. And my favorite business books are the ones that I read over and over again. Anyway, you go back to them. I've got them all dog-eared. You know, I dog-ear up one side to say, read this page. And I have another clue to dog-ear the underside to say, I got to read the back page. You know, I have it all systematized. And I've got notes for myself. And I've got Gino Wickman's Traction here, which is the one that I'm working through right now, right? And all of these books are ones that we as agencies, whoever's listening to the podcast and is also a HubSpot agency, there's lots of them out there working with their company. It's all about a sharing of knowledge with your favorite people. Again, choosing ones that you really are going to get along with and you're going to communicate well with because you have been very transparent about how the process and experience is going to be. One of the last thing I want to ask you about before I let you go is your title. So let's, now that we've talked about the show and when you introduced yourself, you gave yourself a very unique title. So let's talk about that, because I think that that's an important element. And I want to kind of loop back into the HR, like, is the person who's in charge of the employee experience sufficient at HR? Do they have a seat at the table, or do we need someone who has a title like yours?
You know, I would posit that a lot of organizations claim that customer experience is a big priority, but words matter. And if there's anybody that understands this, it would be an organization named Tangible Words, for example, right? Like, words matter, and the words we use are important. And when we have a chief marketing officer and a chief sales officer and a chief financial officer, and then we have the head of operations, or the retention person, or the customer support manager, and we see that fall off from status and stature in the name, it sends a message, at least to me, and I would posit it sends it internally within your organization as well, that saying that experience is a priority is really lip service. So one of the things I try to do in my role of consulting with clients, so I do 2 things. I speak to audiences and I consult with private clients. As the chief experience composer, I feel that my responsibility is to come into every organization and compose or put together a flow for their experience that is unique to them.
John Doerr talks a lot about that in his book, Measure What Matters. And I think that's so right, bringing the whole company together to have the same focused objectives. And the key results that you set should not be siloed within departments. They should affect the whole organization and drill down to specific job titles but really give you a vision, a North Star that you are all shooting for.
I couldn't agree more.
You've articulated so many things that I think business really needed to hear at this time. And I love and really appreciate thought leaders like you who can come up with something as a real aha and a way of pinpointing the thing that you couldn't put your finger on. So thank you so much for you. And I'm really excited to follow along with everything that you're going to come up with in regards to how to never lose an employee again.
Oh, thanks, Alicia. I so appreciate that. And I appreciate everybody who is kind enough to listen into the conversation today. My goal is to raise the bar on customer experience globally. Let's be candid. The typical experience that most of us are having as consumers is not that remarkable. We're not that excited about it. We've kind of gotten to the point where we're like, if you just deliver on what I paid for, that's enough. Like that, those should be the ante up chips to sit down at the table, not to write case studies about and sing the praises far and wide to our customers. So hopefully everybody who's listening has gotten one or two ideas of a place they could focus on or think about a little differently to enhance their own customer experience, because I think then all boats rise together.
One of the best things you can do in your company is to map out how a lead flows through your organization, from marketing to sales to operations and delivery to your customer retention strategy, where you can really lengthen your customer's lifetime value. Do you have this done yet? I suggest a flow chart that first itemizes every life cycle stage. Then, after you've built that flow chart with each life cycle stage, second, you'll consider the elements of your CRM that you'll need to fill in for each lead. That way you'll be able to keep track of details like lead status or other fields that are custom to your sales or marketing process. These fields will get added into your flow chart of that process through each life cycle stage. Next, you're going to add to your flowchart your deal stages, because you're always going to be trying to move a deal through your pipeline, but you want to make sure that you're able to reroute lost leads or deals that cool off and don't close. This will ensure that you stop leaving money on the table, presuming that you probably already are, because most companies do, when deals close, don't close on time or aren't necessarily worked with the vigor that they could have been. You'll use that flowchart to understand how you'll get leads to close one consistently, using Joey Coleman's ideas for the materials that they'll need along the way to nurture them into a closed one state to begin with. You'll also use that flowchart to understand how you'll be able to move leads back through the pipeline manually or automatically to keep track of those prospects and customers so you can segment them when you need to. You can segment them for marketing emails, for a special thank you customer campaign, or simply to give your sales team a list of leads to call. Finally, as we've learned from Joey, the last stage of your flowchart is going to be looking at how you'll keep those customers and get them to keep purchasing from you again, so that that flywheel is driving from marketing to sales to retention, and then back to marketing, sales, and retention. Customer and company are engaged in a relationship that's mutually beneficial.
To learn more about Joey Coleman, or to check out Joey's book or Joey's podcast, visit joeycoleman.com. Find more episodes of the Company Growth Podcast on YouTube, or at anchor.fm/companygrowthpodcast, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you've got a company growth story you'd like to share, reach out to Tangible Words. We'd love to hear your story and use it to inspire others to beat their own company growing pain. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Company Growth Podcast.